You know, there are so many wonderful things in the Bible, and I just love it. I love the Word of God so well until God just has to get me out of it at times to get me to go say something, you know, about it. I actually, in the past, I've gotten into it for days and weeks and months. And I didn't want my wife to disturb me, the children to disturb me, nobody to disturb me. And I'd stay in there for weeks and months. And at the end of that time, I just wanted to, rather than being ready to get out of it, I wanted to spend a few more months in it. And the Lord just finally just had to just get me out of it, you know. When I say that, I mean long enough to get me to say something to the people about the Word of God. When I get back out of these meetings, then I get off to myself a little bit. And I don't have too much privacy, but I get off for just a little bit. And I get back into the Word of God. And I'll stay right there in the mind of God for hours upon hours upon hours. And I just don't want to get out of it. And I can hear the Lord, and He'll say now, in His way, you know, He'll say, that's enough for right now. You got to do such and such. But the Lord deals with me strangely, and I try to listen to Him, but I get dull of hearing just like everybody else. And He has to use different approaches to get me to do what He wants me to do. Well, for instance, like yesterday, I was talking to Brother Taylor, and I was going to write a little article for Harvest Herald. Well, Brother Taylor's been trying to hem me up for how long, Brother? It's been 2 weeks, has it? 3 weeks. He's been trying to hem me up for 3 weeks and had been trying to hem me up all day to get that article. And I purposed in my heart, I said, now Lord, I told Mitch on Monday night, I said, Mitch, or Monday morning, I said, I'll have it. I said, I'll get it this day. And Brother Taylor said, well, let me tell Mitch that we'll get it tomorrow. I said, well, if you'll explain to him, then we'll try it tomorrow, because I was determined to get it that day. So the next day, I set out to get it, and I eventually did get it the next day. But I set out to get it, and I was so determined that I was going to get it, I kept getting detoured, and finally I came up to Brother Taylor's office. When I got up there, I sat down and I said, this is it. I'm going to get it. But I had that feeling that there was something else that had to be done just before I did. And I thought, now, Brother Pike, it's just you sit down here and get this article ready. And I said, Brother Taylor, you give me a cup of tea. He said, he always gives me a cup of tea when I go up for her, pretty much. So I got me a cup of tea, and I was sitting there enjoying my cup of tea, and I said, I'm ready. About that time, I hit that cup of tea, and it went all over me. And the Lord just as if to say, well, you're ready, but I'm not ready. And I was so miserable, I thought, well, I'll just sit here with it like that. And I was so miserable, I just couldn't stand it. So I got up, and I said, Brother Taylor, I said, something is wrong. I said, the Lord does this way when He wants to send me somewhere or do something sometimes, and I get carried away, and He's got something that I have to do. And I said, I'll just have to go down to the house. Well, I got down to the house just in time to see our neighbor over here backing away from the door there, where she'd come over decked out in shorts and in a pitiful condition and just steaming like a pot. And she was... I don't know if she's telling my wife off or just telling her that she was getting ready to tell me off. But anyway, she come over and she told me how she felt about the situation. And all the time I was trying to find out what the situation was. I finally got down to the bottom of it. Some of our people here, back of Brother Darrell's, had emptied some garbage on top of the ground right there, and it all didn't go off into the ditch. So she was really letting me have it. But anyway, I said that to say this. The Lord has to just maneuver me around the way He wants me if I'm not real careful. And sometimes spilling a cup of tea is the way He has to do it. I try to listen better than that, but sometimes I get determined. You know, I get careless and get pressed and there's so many things. And I'm greatly pressed right now because some of the brethren let down on this end. The Lord blessed us well out on the field with the finance and everything. But the brethren here, I felt, would let me down, and some of them did. And they got things in a bad way back here. And even tonight, we're due a church payment that I have to have in the morning, and I don't have it because they didn't keep up their end over here. It really makes it bad. But anyway, the Lord will help us. I stay pressed, and that's why the Lord has to do what he does sometimes about the cup of tea and so forth. But anyway, to finish the thought there concerning this woman, she is very upset, and you're going to have to do something. Now, I know it's on our property, and it's not of her business, but nevertheless, she's made it her business. And she come over here drinking and that kind of condition, and I told her, I said, you might not realize it, but you're in violation of the Constitution of the United States just being over here drinking. And when she first come up, I didn't know who she was. I thought maybe it was a neighbor that just run off on a wild, just all of a sudden, you know, because something had happened. But she came up to me and she said, I got a problem. And I said, well, lady, I don't mind helping you with your problem. I said, but the next time you come over here, I'd appreciate it if you'd come in a different manner, dress different. And I said, I don't want you over here like that. And she said, well, how else can I come over here and tell you my problem? So this is the way I dress. I said, put some clothes on. Because she didn't like that. And I said, like a lady, put on a dress. And she told me right short that she wouldn't do it. I said, don't come on this campground anymore like that. So when she took that attitude, then I told her how I felt about it. Now, I tried to reason with her to start with, but when she told me she would not, she'd come like she wanted to, I said, don't come over here anymore like that. So it shook her up a little bit, and she said, you amaze me, you amaze me. And she started, she told me I didn't keep the Sabbath. I said, she said, I'm a Baptist, and said, you don't keep the Sabbath. Because I got a feeling the Baptist church would have been ashamed of her, but she said, I'm a Baptist, and said, I said, you don't keep the Sabbath. I said, well, everything I've done here, lady, as far as I know, we've never done it on Sunday. I said, I wouldn't let them work on Sunday. And she said, I know that you keep Friday night so you can get the paycheck. And she went on, and she said, you say that you're like Jesus. Where's your beard? Because her husband was out there smoking a cigarette, you know, in the car, and he had a beard. And I said, well, lady, I said, the Bible said Jesus appeared to him in a different form after the resurrection. And that upset her, and she really left. She took off. But she was so upset until she said she was going to have the government on us. I said, well, go ahead. Senator Talmadge is a friend of mine. And that upset her. So she said, she's going to have the police out here. I said, well, lady, I think that you already have the city officials and the police upset at you. So that upset her again. And, because that's the last I heard from her. But you know, folks, the devil is mad. I finally pressed her to the point to find out what her real problem was. And finally she broke down and told me, she said, I don't like the idea of all these trailers being around me. So, you folks that's got a trailer, you are annoying your neighbor. Now, I don't know what to tell you to do about it, but if you can afford a brick home, I guess that's the thing to do. But like they got down there, you know. But anyway, that was her complaint. She said, that's my complaint. I said, I don't like it. She's already had the Federal Communication Board on us because she said we had a radio station out here. And, of course, when they wrote, they told us to go down there and check out her system. So that upset her. She left off with that. But I think she overstepped her boundaries. She didn't stop till she called me a devil incarnate and everything else. And she almost got Brother Taylor upset. He walked up about that time, and he was just about to really get upset. He said some things to her, and she told him to shut up. She wasn't talking to him. Well, she told me, see, she said, I come up here out of courtesy to tell you about this problem, about, you know, the garbage. And said, I come up here out of courtesy before I call the police. Well, what really upset her, I said, lady, you didn't come up here out of courtesy to do nothing. I said, you know what we stand for up here, and you know that I didn't want you on this property dressed like that. And I said, the devil provoked you into coming up here. And I said, you come up here just for meanness. And that upset her. She said, I'm not the devil. And that really had her upset. But anyway, things are serious. You might not believe it, but things are serious. They said, has come by and tried to shoot the little pyramid top off. And Brother Beretta and I was down here the other day, and I heard a high-powered rifle, one of the big deer rifles. I heard the thing sound off, and I heard the bullet singing, and I thought, well, Lord, that thing come over here. And we started looking, and Frank said that rifle shot come over here. And we started looking, and it looked like it come from around Bill Lavin's place right there. And started looking, and we couldn't find out who did it. But Jim, checking around, found out that whoever shot the high-powered rifle, I suppose they must have been shooting at this lion, these two little lions that we got sitting on the gate. And they must have been a bad shot, and they hit down below it, and they hit one of them pillars, and they took a terrible chunk out of it. It would have had to have been a high-powered rifle to got it, because we made those pillars almost solid concrete and steel. So, and I heard the bullet must have ricocheted when it hit. But folks, you just don't realize how serious it is. People, when they get upset at you, they'll do anything. So you need to pray, and you need to seek God. I told that lady, I said, you just overstepped your boundaries now. I said, there's a number of people in their grave for doing like you done. And she said, you can't scare me. But she was scared. She's real scared. She was ready to get out from there after I related a few things. But anyway, I don't know how we got into all of that, but I know that things is bad. It's bad. And the devil don't like it. He tried to stop us. The devil and his workers tried to stop us from doing what we did at Little Bethlehem. But we did it anyway. And it has shook the devil and his kingdom up so bad until he'd love to take my head off. And he'd love to take your head off too. So you better pray. But anyway, I want you to pray for me because there's so much that needs to be done. And I'm just one fella that's trying to do what little I can. I would like to have had that magazine down there. Is that magazine still at the house, Betty? Brother Terrell's magazine? I didn't take it down to Brother Stevie's. David, can you go down there and bring me that magazine? Bring me that one of Jimmy's too, Jimmy Swagger's. Can I talk with you tonight? I'll start back in the tent on a Friday night, probably. They got some of the advertisements for Friday, some for Saturday. But I'll start back, and then we'll have to start driving hard and preaching hard. And if I could, I'd love to just slow down and talk to you, because a lot of things I don't say to them out there that I say to you. Jesus would take his disciples away privately and say things to them that he didn't say to the others. And a lot of times under the tent, I tell the different ones that I say things to y'all that I don't say to them. I tell you things that they wouldn't understand if I said them to them. And I'd like to take my time tonight and talk with you a little. And just relate a few simple little things to you that might be of benefit to you. Brother David will be back in a few minutes, and I got something that I would like to read or get Brother Taylor to read it to you. You know, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and we've read this to you a number of times and talked to you about it a number of times. But I'd love to just emphasize the thought in discussing something with you. In the book of Daniel, in the 5th chapter, I'd like to start at the first verse and read just a little bit. Beginning at the first verse, it reads like this. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house, and the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father the king, I say, thy father made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences, and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now, let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation." Then was Daniel brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought out of Jeruah? I have even heard of thee that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee that thou canst make interpretation and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive. And whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne. And they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men. And his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. Thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all of this, but hath lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balance and art found wanting. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him, that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Now, you know, there's a lot that I could say concerning what I read here. And I would like to just comment like in a teaching sort of a way. But anyway, I've got two booklets that I want to read just a little bit out of and tie a few things together. I read this to you here, and I want you to keep this in mind, and we'll talk to you in just a few minutes, just a little bit, maybe not keep you long and let you go. But I want Brother Taylor to read a little bit out of a couple of these books. We'll wait and read that one a little later. But this book is Brother Terrell's book. And I can relate these things to you. A lot of times I do relate them to you. But I find out that they have more strength, and you have more confidence when you yourself hear it right from the articles. And that's why that I have Brother Taylor to read them. They go on tape. You hear them and you believe more. A lot of times some of you question what I say. And even though it's the profound truth, yet you still question it. So I want him to read this letter. The front of this book right here. And I wouldn't read this if it didn't have a bearing and a significance in the gospel. In the front of this book is a letter that Brother Terrell always writes. His picture always appears over here where you see this picture. But in this particular article, Brother Hollis out of Texas, they have his picture here. And Brother Terrell's no doubt will be in the next issue. But I want Brother Taylor to come and read the letter, and I want you to listen to the letter. Now, I made the statement when we went down to Texas in the motorhome right after the meeting with Brother Blake down in Waycross. I made the statement when we took the motorhome and drove down to Texas that I saw Brother Terrell's picture along the side of the road. And I told my wife what our trip meant and what it meant. And seeing the picture and what it all had to do with and the advertisement and so forth. And I said, with that, it is Brother Terrell's ministry closing out. Now, I've said this a number of times. I said, when I say that these men's ministries are closing out or there's to be a change or whatever, I said, it doesn't mean that they'll quit preaching or stop off. But I said, there is a move of God that moves in a leadership in certain areas, and then it changes. Like a man carrying a football on a football field. One man's carrying it, then he makes a pass over to another man. Another man carries it. It's all the same game. And they all have one thing in mind, and that's to make the goal. But each man is determined to take that ball over. See, the man that takes that ball, he doesn't mean to pass it over to that other man. His thrill is to take that ball and make the touchdown himself at that goal. But see, he drives and drives until finally he is so hemmed in by those that are doing the blocking, those that are on the offensive. See, he is so blocked in until he struggles and pulls and struggles and even holds on sometimes until they're swinging around his neck. And he realizes it's impossible, and he doesn't yield that ball up until he realizes it's impossible for him to make that goal, and then he passes it on. And that's the way it is with the gospel. Men are determined to take this thing over for Jesus, but they run into an opposition, and the opposition becomes so great until they can't do it. All right, now, I said that there would be a change, that would be it. And then when we went down to Moultrie, that Moultrie would have to do with the change, and that would be where we would make the platform. And so it has happened exactly that way. We took the platform that came from Reuben's tent out of Centerville and made the change. Now, I know some of you resent this. I feel some of you resent it. Instead of entreating it and being glad that I understand these things, like Daniel did here in this, you resent it. You really resent it because it has worked out that way. But I'm sorry for you. I really am. I love you. I'm not upset at you. I love you because you can't go to heaven. There ain't no way. Anybody that would resent the truth and the move of God is bound to be Satan or have Satan in them. Now, so you're in bad shape. But many of you, it thrills your heart to know that God has put me here as a pastor and has shown me a few things to help you see these things. And I want Brother Taylor to come and read this because it's just a little letter. Don't amount to anything. And those that don't understand won't get a thing out of it. But some of you, if he reads carefully, some of you will understand what this has to do with. Okay, Brother Taylor.
Special message. Dear End Time Messenger readers, greetings in the wonderful name of Jesus. For the past 7 years, I, C.B. Hollis, have promoted Brother David Terrell's ministry through World Missions Incorporated, a Texas nonprofit religious corporation that I organized in Dallas, Texas. I have done my best to promote Brother Terrell's ministry by radio, tapes, magazine, and not myself or any ministry the Lord may have given me. So now I have reached my 65th birthday and have given over 25 years of my life to this type ministry. So I say it is time for me to slow down a bit. So as of December the 1st, 1977, I will only be working World Missions Program with the different missionaries we have working with us in various countries of the world. If you desire to support anything we are doing for missions, make your checks or money orders to me, C.B. Hollis, or World Missions Incorporated, Post Office Box 24496, Dallas, Texas, 75224. But you that are going to continue to support Brother Terrell's ministry, address all correspondence, checks, money orders to David Terrell or New Testament Holiness Church, Post Office Box 24409, Dallas, Texas, 75224. I believe if we all cooperate, we can make the changeover very easily without hurting Brother Terrell's work or World Missions either.
Some of you, I'm sure, didn't get anything out of that, and some of you really understand what I say. Now, I happen to have a little bit of insight on this, and it isn't because of his age. I happen to know what it's because of. Now, but anyway, nevertheless, that's beside the point. The thing is, it's happening the way that we said it would happen. And you say, well, Brother Pike, I have to admit that it's happening the way you said, in that the promotion of the ministry is not anymore. But now, what's that got to do with us or you? And I told you what it had to do with us. And of course, I'm sure you don't see it. But why did this magazine come to me at Moultrie? Why was it brought to me to Moultrie, right where I spoke of the chains? And why was it to those that are spiritual? Why was it that the platform that Reuben used, and this is why I asked to talk to you, because this is the only way I can get it over to you, is just discuss it with you. It's hard to preach things like this to you. Jesus took his disciples and just sat down and talked with them. Why is it that the platform that Reuben used under the tent down in Centerville, why is it that that platform now belongs to me and the brethren? Why? When we got it, it was almost gone, almost rusted and rotten out, till the bugs was running up under the rug that was over the top. We have to tear all the rottenness out of it. Wasn't nothing left but a framework. And I asked the question, can these bones live again? When we got through going over them, strengthening them, painting them, fixing them up, it is a strong, sturdy platform that is much bigger than what it was. It's stronger, much stronger than what it was. And it came through a resurrection and is going to be ideal either for the small tent of the 160 by, or 120 by 60, which is the white tent, or the big tent that we bought, which is the 170 by 80. Now, it'll work under either one of them. Now, but why is it that at this time the platform came? Remember, we were at Reuben, or rather Reuben was at our meeting at Waycross. When we purchased the bus, I told what it had to do with. It was the bus that we took down to Texas. Then the bus was there in Moultrie at the change. We'd already spoke about Brother Walden and what it had to do with. And it was in Centerville that I made the statement that Reuben was on his way out, that a woman would overthrow him, because he would not go on and be baptized in Jesus' name, whereas it happened exactly the way that we said it would. When I was in Michigan, I wrote him some prophecy and sent it to him a number of years ago, told him to stay away from the Church of God, not to go back into it. He went into it. It was his downfall. Now, the platform has come on over. It's come on over because Reuben was the firstborn that the father was displeased with. See, and God smote the firstborn at Calvary, made him sin when he knew no sin. Reuben one time was a real straight man, and he's trying to make a comeback. I believe he's trying to do right. But see, Jesus was smitten that the Christ might live. Now, these things are not strange to you that understand spiritual things. All right. What was it that caused Joseph to go to the dungeon? Wasn't it a woman? A woman represents the world. Wasn't it a woman, the world, that caused Jesus to be crucified? You understand what I'm saying? The world. All right, now the woman that tried to overthrow Joseph was a type of the world that fashioned Jesus to the cross. Though he had done no evil, the world lied on him. They couldn't find one thing wrong with Joseph, not one guilt, but they lied on him. And they couldn't find one thing wrong with Jesus. He was guiltless, but they lied on him, and they sent him to the cross. How do you see the beautiful parallel of those things? I have to bring those out in a 1, 2, 3 to get a present-day truth out of it. Now, it happens so precisionly that I said when this happens, that it will indicate the move of God that was moving in the days of Brother Branham, that it will boomerang back around at the very time of the change. And over in the Carolina meeting, without making any previous preparations, the little sign went up across the tent, "Be still and know that I'm God." I've never used that sign before. That's always been the sign that Brother Branham used in the tabernacle, in the old and the new tabernacle. And there it was, right there in Moultrie, when this thing took place. I said that Brother David Terrell would dovetail the thing out unto death, and then it would be a resurrection. All right, now, this changeover, and there's a whole lot of things that's got to do with it, like the vision that I saw of Brother Walden being zipped up in the case, making his bed among the rich, and we would, you know, we saw where we'd gone to heaven, and there we saw the rich and saw how Brother Walden had turned in that direction and got zipped up in a case and was laid away with the rich, was kicking fiercely trying to get out of it. And I found out that on this trip down to Moultrie that Brother Walden, they're wanting him to spend $1 million on that hotel that he bought. $1 million to bring it up to their standards. He's already got the hotel. They want him to spend around $100,000 just on the elevator alone. And he is kicking every which way to get out of it. Brother Howard is trying his best to get out of it. But see, they've got hung in there with that thing, and it's hard to get out. Now, see, all of this has to do with the change, because Brother Reuben's platform came through Brother Walden, and the tent that Brother Reuben had went to Brother Walden. Now, see, the tent was left with Brother Walden because the tent and the color has to do with the old. But the platform went under the white tent, which has to do with the glorification. The white tent, the body, the blood, that had to do with the rapture of the church. Now, there's a lot of particulars and a lot of little additives and fillers that we could use, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to drop a few things along and let you tie them together and let the Spirit of the Lord just tie it in ever how you want to understand it. Now, you say, but Brother Pike, how does that have to do with Brother Terrell? Well, you remember what I told you about the vision I had of Brother Terrell and the revelation of Jesus Christ. All right, now, not only has it come that far, but, and this is going to cost me something, money-wise, but it has come this far, that as far as I know now, not only has it made a change just since we've been in Moultrie, but since we're up here, it made the change so much that the mailing list that Brother Terrell's magazine goes out on every month, as far as I know, that mailing list is going to be our mailing list. It's got 100,000 names on it. Now, it is coming from Brother Hollis. Now, see, something is taking place, a change. God said he would make a change. There is a change. I said it would happen that way, and it has happened that way. Now, I don't have anything to do with it. I'm not fighting anybody or finding fault. I love you. I've tried my best to be as honest and truthful as I know how to be from the depths of my heart and soul, because I want you to understand, and I want you to be a part of it, and I want to do everything I can with you and for you. But the Lord has his way. He does what he wants to do, whether I like it or Brother Terrell likes it or anybody else. He's done a great thing with Brother Terrell, and no telling how many more great things he'll do. I trust that he'll continue to use him in a mighty way. But I'm just trying to show you that God is passing the ball, as we would say, over to you and over to your way of doing things. And it's up to you to step in and pick it up. The tent was brought to me. That is the opportunity to purchase it, the big green tent. 170 by 80, to typify the changeover with the Brother Terrell ministry in the sense of the outreach for souls. Now, it was Joseph who went to Dothan to look for his brethren. They didn't like Joseph because Joseph could interpret dreams, and he was like Daniel. They didn't like Joseph. You remember I saw a vision where all of the stars of heaven gathered to this side of heaven. And we were on that side. Now, we are going to set the tent, if the Lord is kind to us, over in Dothan. Because Joseph went to Dothan to look for his brethren. Brother Hollis from Dallas, Texas, has to do with a brother Hollis that my wife is familiar with over in Alabama. And this has to do with the valley, this setting, and the thing that's boomeranged all the way back around. It has to do with a setting that was in the valley many years ago. It has to do with Brother Pete Cunningham, the Feast of the Trumpets. There's a whole lot we'd have to go into. And these Holiday Inn things coming right back up. But anyway, Brother Hollis, who was at his church in the Assembly of God over in the valley, when we met Brother Terrell there and helped to lead him in baptism into Jesus' name at that place, it was to go through a cycle and then it was to come around to this. Now, see, Alabama, that Hollis was there. Brother Terrell, Dothan is in Alabama. And here's another Brother Hollis, all connected together. Take a while for me to break it down and piece it all together to show you what I'm trying to say. But Brother Hollis's son, out of Alabama, was at that time Brother Terrell's song leader, was leading singing for Brother Terrell. And of course, something got involved and he left off with Brother Terrell. And something happened about that time that we can't go into. But anyway, I'm just pointing out a few things to you. From Moultrie, and the word signifies change or the shedding off, from Moultrie over to Orlando, Florida, the city called Beautiful. See the rapture of the church, the change. Orlando, Florida, the city called Beautiful. And in that the tent is leaving from Moultrie. It isn't even coming back here. It's leaving from Moultrie, going right straight over to Orlando. Usually the tent, if you notice, always come back here. But it didn't do it on this trip. It went from there over to Orlando. See, over to Orlando, Florida. And then the breakfast starts in Orlando for the ministers. Now the breakfast is called Christian Crusades Morning Devotion. That's what the breakfast is called. I wanted David to explain these things to you. But anyway, it has on there that it is sponsored by the foundation, the Christian foundations of the Jesus Christ, His Eternal Kingdom of Abundant Life from Little Bethlehem. And the breakfast, I believe, is going to be a great thing in what we're trying to do. Now, I could go on and on and on in relating to you how it has to do with David Paul, how it has to do with Billy Paul, how it has to do with Brother Dale Cartridge, and how it has to do with the youth in going into Orlando. But we wouldn't have time to go into all that tonight. But I just wanted to link a few little things together to show you how it ties in with us going to Texas, Brother Terrell, and how that when we went down to Augusta to the brothers down there, where we said it had to do with the widow and the changeover concerning Brother Branham. There's so many multiplied things that I just love to stand here for the next hour or two and just go in, just taking my time and talking to you about them. But this is enough to let you know that it's all linking together. Now, in this that we're reading right here, I want to say just a few words about it and maybe make reference back to one or two of the present-day truths. But I want you to listen for just a few minutes. I read that whole chapter, and I don't think we have our board up there. I'd love to take just a few minutes if I could. If they set that board over there, maybe there's something on the other side we can erase, is there? I want you to observe the board, and I'm going to get him to draw just one or two little things down here in this little vacant area, little spot there that doesn't have anything on it. Now, I'd like for him to draw me on there a lion and a bear and a leopard. These are the three things that Daniel saw in his vision. the lion, the bear, and the leopard. And even though I'm not going to try to get into it, extensively speaking, I just want to comment just a little bit on one or two of the animals and the connection here with Belshazzar. Now, on the tape, we have related a number of times things concerning the city of Babylon and how fabulous it was. We've tried to itemize the different things about Babylon to let you know just exactly what kind of city it was. Now, and we're not going to try to go through it to relate it again because we've got it a number of times on tape. But I do want to relate this one thing. Up underneath the river of Babylon, there was a hallway with banquet rooms on either side that was made out of solid brass up under there. It was the king's banquet room, and this is where he was at on the night that they came in and overthrew his kingdom. It was on that night that he was there, had 1,000 of his rulers, and was really living it up, and exalted himself just a little bit too high. And when he did, he messed with God's vessels. Now that's where the world is right now. That's what's bringing about the rapture and the change. See, the world has exalted themselves a little bit too high. And Jimmy is going to think more of himself than he ought to. And he's going to mess with the Jew, which is God's vessel. And when he does, that's going to do it. Now, in the meantime, the government is closing in and messing with God's spiritual vessels, which is the church. They keep putting the finger on the church. This river of Babylon, the Euphrates River, running diagonally across the city, underneath there was this great hall, and on either end of it was a big palace, a big bridge over it. I brought out how that this city had 150 avenues, major avenues, running in different directions, all in about 3/5 squares. But we won't go into the different parts of it and the different things of it. But I want you to keep that in mind, just building a little bit in your understanding to where you can understand where this was and about the time that it took place. See, these things took place at a certain time. And that certain time was just about the time that the angel of God visited Daniel and told him about the time of the end. See, this is Darius coming in. Cyrus and Darius, they're coming in of the Medes and the Persians. See, Nebuchadnezzar has been in rule. And then his son Belshazzar come right along in rule. This whole thing started with Nebuchadnezzar about 606. And moved down proportionally, as we have brought out, at about 606 to 538 on the first lap of it. That was Nebuchadnezzar's regime. Then when it comes on down here, then the Medes and the Persians come in. Now we highlighted this on a tape where the Medes and the Persians, from here down to here, the two arms, the Medes and Persians, the silver of the great stature that they saw, the metallic man that was seen in the dream. And from here up, the head of gold. See, well, the head of gold is from 606 to 538. That's the first step of it. Well, then on the next lap of it is where Belshazzar is when the change comes in, the kingdom of silver coming in. Following the kingdom of silver, that from 538 to 330, following that kingdom, it was at that time that Alexander the Great come in, which was from here on down, taking in the thighs. See, it was his kingdom that come in. Now, the first kingdom, the head of gold, relates to Daniel's vision of the lion. The kingdom of silver relates to Daniel's vision of the bear. And then the brass part, the kingdom of brass, Alexander the Great, the Hellenistic religion, relates to the leopard. I say this real slow so that you can understand and just fit it all together. See, they're one and the same. The metallic man, the beast, they're one and the same. After that Nebuchadnezzar had his vision, afterwards that he had his vision, it was about 48 years later that Daniel had the vision of the animals. And in following that, about 2 years later, he had a vision of a ram in the next vision. About 20 years later, he had a vision of the kings of Egypt and Syria fighting, which battle went on for about 300 or 350 years, which has to do with the silent ages, about 500 years of silent ages during the time of Epiphanes, Antiochus Epiphanes, that offered a sow on the altars of God and desecrated it, and God let his bowels gush out. It was in the days of the Maccabees when they rose up from about 160 to 40. And then in 30 B.C. is when the Roman kingdom come in. Now from there, see, there over to 364, that took in the iron legs and the feet with the iron and the clay mixed. And in 364, see, it split up, bringing in the legs. The Western Papal Church, which come to America, the Eastern Orthodox Church, that went the other way, went to the Greek side of it, formed the legs. So that brings us on over now to the end time, where communism, which is clay, is trying to mix with that Catholic kingdom that ruled, that branched off into this American government. See, it's all come together, and it's the 10 toes, which is those 10 confederated nations. And Daniel's last vision was where the little horn come up out of the 10 horns and subdued 3 of the horns. See, and that's where he saw that fierce beast that had teeth of iron. He had teeth of iron. And most of you remember reading about Rome and how cruel that Rome was. They had what they called the Iron Maiden that would open up like that. Those teeth of iron, see, that Daniel saw. It would just, that Iron Maiden would open up, and they'd let you step into that Iron Maiden, and all those spikes would close in on you, which no doubt signified those teeth of iron. And then a little thing would open up under it, and you'd drop down in there. See, it was a cruel thing. How many of you understand what I'm saying? All right, now, the he-goat and the ram was 2 years after Daniel had seen the vision of the animals, of the lion, the bear, and the leopard. And the he-goat represented Alexander the Great, and the ram represented the Medo-Persian kingdom. The ram is relative to the bear, and the he-goat is relative to Alexander the Great, which is the leopard. All right, now, how many understand? Did you absorb that real good, and to where you got it in your mind, to where you... I don't expect you to remember all of this, but I expect you to fit it all together to where you understand all of it, you know, in its sequence. All right. Now, Babylon continued on for a long time, even after all of these things happened to them. We brought out a number of things, a number of people that went into Babylon, and how that it continued on. Now, until it continued on until 60 A.D., after Calvary, where Peter, I brought out the other night, where Peter preached his famous sermon down there in Babylon in 60 A.D. to the strangers that are scattered throughout the country. And I related that the other night in a meeting as I preached on it. Now, all right, now, see, it was at this time when Belshazzar was having this great feast that this thing wrote on the wall. It was at that time. And did you notice that the king had him to put something on Daniel that was like a king, just arrayed in beautiful scarlet, and then put a chain around his neck and made him the third ruler in the kingdom. The third ruler in the kingdom. All right, now, I really see something in that, the third ruler in the kingdom. Okay, now, this cord might be long enough for me. Is it all right if I just talk to you like I'm talking to you? All right, now, seeing this lion, in this lion, the Bible says that this lion, he came forth and he stood up like a man, and there was given unto him a man's heart. Now, this lion, to begin with, also had wings, like the leopard, which carried four wings. But Daniel said, I beheld till the wings was plucked. Then a heart was given to him, and then he stood upright. Now, it is evident that this is Nebuchadnezzar here, the lion. If this is Nebuchadnezzar, then when the wings was plucked, it obviously meant that he was taken off of his kingdom, or out of his kingdom. In other words, if the wings was taken away, when you think about riches, you think about something great and elevated. See, in a high place among the people, a throne. See, he was elevated. But when the wings was taken, it was evident he become like a beast. That was when he lost his mind for quite a while. And he was out among the beasts till his nails grew out like claws. His hair grew out like feathers. But when God gave this lion the heart, like a man, it must have been, or evidently was, when he restored him to his sanity, picked him up as a man again, took him out of the beast realm, and set him back on his throne, gave him back his great majesty, and he praised God. Now, this bear right here, this bear, the Bible said when Daniel saw him that he raised up on one side like that, and a voice said, devour much flesh. Now, he was evidently the Medo-Persian part, this silver part. The Medo-Persian, a bear is inferior to a lion, and the leopard to the bear. See, silver inferior to gold, and then brass inferior to silver. The kingdom getting weaker. But raising up on one side, it was evidently showing the difference between the Medes and the Persians. And the Persians being the strongest, it evidently represented the Persians raising up in their power. In his mouth, he had three bones. History tells us that there was an alliance that was made between three nations, Lydia, Egypt, and Babylon. Three nations that made an alliance to come and fight against the Medo-Persians to keep them from taking over Babylon and conquering the area. But the voice said, devour much flesh. And those three bones apparently indicated that he had defiled those three nations in his conquest, because they could not withstand against the bear. Just coming up and just by brute force. That's the way that the Medo-Persian's armies was. Sometimes 5 million in just one siege, just in brutality. And would just go out there and, you know, just brutal and just brute force and take over. Whereas Alexander the Great, he didn't have anything like that. Maybe like an army of 10,000. But see, a leopard is graceful, swift, and quick. Now, Alexander the Great, this leopard had four wings. Now, we're talking about the brass kingdom. It had four wings, and these wings was plucked. Now, the leopard with the wings or whatever, apparently had to do with the four leaders that was with Alexander the Great, the four generals. Now, and I believe it has to do with the four winds that Daniel spoke of. But anyway, the four wings was on the leopard. Now, the leopard typifying swiftness and gracefulness, the way that Alexander the Great was, history says that he came down there expecting a great resistance out of Babylon, but when he got there, they just opened the doors and received him. Within just a few short years, at about 33 years old, he was dead with fever from the marsh. But within that few years, about 10 years, history says that he had conquered all of civilization through his swiftness and the gracefulness of his soldiers and a little army. You know, that really tells me something. That shows that the battle is not to the strong, nor the race to the swift, but that God has his way. And then from 330 to 323 following was the time of this thing happening. All right, now, from 323 over to 330, the four generals that came out of his ministry of that day, or his aggression, his siege, those four continually until B.C. 30, and that's when Rome came in, which brought in that fierce animal that Daniel saw. Okay, it was 330, and we brought that out on tape somewhere while Julius Caesar took over, and how that the seat of Satan was moved then from Babylon over to Pergamos. We got it on tape somewhere. But anyway, this leopard points to the following vision, where there was a ram. Daniel saw a ram, and the ram was pushing westward, southward, and northward. And then all of a sudden, out of the west, here come a he-goat. And the he-goat had a notable horn between his eye. Now the ram had two horns, one higher than the other, showing the Medo-Persians, and that the higher probably had to do with the Persians, and that they were a greater power. Now this, nothing could stand before this ram. Daniel saw him pushing every which way. But all of a sudden this he-goat come up, and this he-goat move with fierceness, run right into him. And when he did, he just devoured the ram. And then the horn was broken. And out of the horn of the he-goat came four horns, which again had to do with the four generals out of the regime of Alexander the Great, which history says moved toward Thrace, Macedonia, Egypt, and Syria, because it said that it waxed great toward the Holy Land, or it called it the Pleasant Land, which would be the Holy Land. Now, there's a lot that we could say going on with these. There's a lot that we could say, because following this vision, this one was 48 years after Nebuchadnezzar's vision. Then the other one of the ram come 2 years later after this vision. And then the next vision of the war with the kings of the north and south come 20 years following the ram and he-goat vision. Now, this vision here, God picked Daniel up, just picked him up and set him over by the river Elah, by the palace there. And in this vision, he saw it. The other, he was down by the Mediterranean Sea. But anyway, now we've been along over there. Some of you that went to the Holy Land with us has been along where these visions took place. But anyway, this right here, these visions, is part of what we read tonight. Part of what we read. Now, I got these things on tape to where you can understand them. But these have far more significance than just here. For following this whole thing, following, in a few short years, John is found on the Isle of Patmos. Now, I say a few short years is about 400 or 500 years coming to the time of John. But John is found on the Isle of Patmos in 96 A.D. And here John sees the beast coming up out of the water. I remember John had a vision. He saw the beast coming up out of the water. And you remember Daniel's vision. And you remember the four winds wrestling over the waters. How many remember the four winds wrestling over the waters? And I brought them out here as the four seas. How many remember that? Catholicism, capitalism, and what was the other two? Communism, Christianism. Anyway, I brought them out like Catholics there down in the south, in the southern part. They got strength there. Communists has got it in the northern part. And capitalism has got it in the western part. And Christianism, the Bible said salvation is of the Jew, it's got it in the eastern part. Isn't that right? All right, now, this vision of the four winds, later we look and we see John speaking of four angels coming down, holding back the four winds of the earth. Now, I remember reading that. Holding back the four winds of the earth, saying, don't let those winds hurt anything. So it makes me know that Daniel's visions of the four winds was the same as John's visions of the four winds, and that it was winds of doctrines or powers, like I believe that it was when I related it to you. See, in other words, it was some kind of forces trying to take over the world. Well, you know that the Jews is trying to rule the world. You know that communism is trying to rule the world. You know that Catholicism is trying to rule the world, and you know that capitalism is trying to rule the world. So they were wrestling over the waters, and the waters is the people. Now, but he said, hold them back until God seals a servant in their foreheads. Which means that just as quick as God gets everything ready, then he's going to turn them people loose. All them powers is going to come together and fight and struggle to get control of the waters, the people, and just blow things to bits. All right, now, because John said he saw the islands moved out of their places when they finally turned loose. Now, what I want to relate here is this right here. This is identically what John saw also in his other vision. It was the same as Daniel's. Because he saw the beast coming up out of the waters. And the beast, his body was like a leopard. All right? See, that's Alexander the Great. That's the Grecian kingdom. That means that the Grecian power will be the body of the thing. Then it had feet like a bear. Well, here we are right back over here. That means the powers that come out of that Medo-Persian kingdom is the one that's going to be carrying the thing. Then it had a head like a lion. See, which means again, it goes back to Babylon. Mr. Babylon. That great power being the head of that thing. The intelligence of it. All right, now, if that's the constitution of that beast, then all of that is balled up into one and brought over, and we see the beast and its fierceness. The other part that Daniel saw of the fierce beast also is a part of that beast that come up out of the water, because Daniel saw the horns and the teeth of iron, and this also carried the 10 horns. And he said that the one horn that came up devoured 3 of them. Now, if those 10 horns point to the 10 toes, the 10 kings, because horns mean power, the 10 kings, then the confederation that's coming in of nations, the 10 confederated nations that are already over there, Brother James Tarch remembers, we went by there to see, that coming in, the Bible said that they would hate the beast. So the constitution of this body and power is not going to be praised or loved by those common market nations. But they are going to hate the beast, and they're going to burn them people with fire. That is bums, the beast's body with fire. But out of those 10 is the one that's going to be the Antichrist. See, out of those 10, The beast comes up. The beast comes up out of the water, which is the constitution of nations. You follow me? The beast comes up out of the water, which is the many people. That is, these bodies are formed out of these great governments. But the Antichrist is different. The Antichrist is out of the 10 horns, devouring 3 of them. They divide into 3 and 7. Devouring 3 of them. And that makes the prophecies and words of John be fulfilled. For John said 5 is fallen. 1 is. That makes 6. And 1 is to come, which made 7. Said, and the 8th is of the 7. So see, if he devours 3, that leaves 7. And then he makes the 8. How many understand what I'm saying? Does this make sense to you? All right. Now, I'm not going to go any further. Just relate one or two little things and then close. There's so much I'd like to say, but it's taken a long time yet to say it, even though you listen good and got a good spirit. But what I'm trying to say is that if the Antichrist comes out of the 10 horns, then that means, without a doubt, that the Antichrist will be in our day. Because the last thing is those toes and the stone, which we know to be the revelation of Jesus. The revelation come out and struck it. And that revelation is Revelation 19, Jesus returning on the white horse. And that's what this is. Before the tribulation, the saints are caught up. And them same saints of that revelation returns Revelation 19 to knock that statue down. See, that builds itself up during that tribulation period of Daniel. So it is obvious that Antichrist is working in our day. If we just had a little more time tonight, we'd go into some things and tie it in with some things about Jimmy Carr and different things, and you'd know what I'm talking about. But you know this much. You know the plains of Dura. You know that has to do with the Moultrie meeting, because we was down there, and it has to do with the Moultrie meeting, because it's right there in that area. And it has to do with the Moultrie meeting because you remember the vision that I had where I went up on these steps when I went to face Frankenstein. And I went up on these steps, and his followers came, and he was such a big thing. You know, a minister can get big. Did you know that? It was such a big thing. And I went up, like, in this great place. It was a great, fine hotel with glass all around it. Went up in it, and I went up. The Lord took me up flight after flight after flight. And then when I got up there to the top of it, I looked through the window, and I saw him coming, and he was a great giant. And I saw his followers coming, and it was so sure, and he was, that I was a nobody and a nothing. But nevertheless, the Lord had elevated me up on them steps. When I got up there, I wasn't afraid. Though I saw him, and it shook me up, but I wasn't afraid. And I took, and like David, I hit him right in the head, and it killed him. Now, so something took place. How many remember that little song book that had a picture and a head on it that we brought back? You probably don't remember. But anyway, I see Stevie does. He's got his hand up. But anyway, that, I said, I went a long way around to come to that, to say this. And this is what we just said. The changeover in Moultrie, the plains of Dura, Jimmy, the government going out. And did you know at the time that we sat in Orlando, it is a holiday for the government officials, and all of them is supposed to sign off. All right, let's stand together. Something is taking place, and I believe you realize that, and I believe that you accept what I have preached to you and what I've said about it. And I believe that we have pieced enough of it together down through the years into preaching to you that you understand and believe it, and it's on tape. And I believe that this little bit of talk that we made tonight, putting things in a sequence, is kind of going around in a boomerang, like, you know, a circle, that it makes you to understand. Because I said this and just took my time in talking to you so that you could have a continuity of thought, because I preach these things in broken pieces and put them on tape, driving and hollering and screaming and interference and so forth. And I just felt a good spirit tonight among you, a receptive spirit. And I decided by that I'd just link a few things together to where you could historically understand a little bit of what we're saying. Have it in your mind up here in kind of a picture. All right, let's sing a little chorus together. In this little article here, some of the people have asked me about paying tithe, giving money to God before they paid their bills. And they've been harassed, beat down, and shook up. And the ones that tried to do it, they felt like it was my, or some of them that withstood them felt like it was my own sayings and doings and thoughts because I said something about paying or giving to God first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. I received this little article the other day from Jimmy Swaggart, and he relates how that God brought him up from nothing to something, made him ever so great, and told how he and his wife struggled to pay their tithe and to share the little bit of money, and said it was real tempting at times to hold back God's money. Said real tempting, but said he pressed over it and gave God his money. And somebody confronted him and asked him, said, Jimmy, said, should we first of all give to God and then pay our bills? And he said, Jimmy, we have a hard time. Said, we can't make ends meet. And went on with his grievances and complaints. And said, I'm sure that God must understand if we don't pay our tithe, because it takes everything that we can get. And Jimmy answered him back this way. He said, God don't understand, and you should pay your tithe and give to God first. And said, if you don't, said, you're headed for sure disaster. That was his answer. Of course, he's got a big article on it here that he wrote. Now, I brought that along just to say that much to you, because you've asked me a number of times, and I've tried to explain to you, and I'm a nobody. Jimmy's a somebody. And whereas you won't listen to me, I'm sure that you'll believe what Jimmy has to say about it. It's been the gospel for many years. Betty, try to remember a whole bunch of things here that you haven't got. And we'll have to leave tomorrow, I guess. Maybe stay over to Friday, but it's 500 miles or about 450 miles down to where we're going, and we'll have to be leaving. But I want you to pray for us. I really want you to pray for us, because I need your prayers. And brethren, I don't want to scold you. I'm not here to do that. I don't want to scold you. But I do want to tell you one thing. If you're going to accept the charge of God and work with me, don't let me down like you did this last time. So many times I've got things up and above board and left things in good shape to go off and to find that you let me down. Now, I'm honest as I know how to be. If you can go to heaven and not strengthen the hand of the minister in world outreach for lost souls, then that's all right with me. But I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, if you don't do it according to what I understand, you will be lost. If you can get past my words, that's fine. But I'm telling you what I understand of the gospel. And if you are going to be a drifter, you know, a drifter never stays anywhere very long. A few days and a few weeks, and then they drift on. Now, this might not sound right to you, and I don't say it to hurt you, but that's what God calls a wandering star, of whom the mist of darkness is reserved forever. And what is that darkness? The carnal mind. That soul of yours is swallowed up in the carnal darkness. You don't have any light. You just reflect people's light wherever you go. You are a drifter. You don't hold any post of duty. I'm not against you going out with me in the revivals. To the contrary, it bothers me if you don't come to the revivals. I believe it'll strengthen you and help you for times for you to come, because it lets you see the struggle and lets you see the need of lost souls, of winning lost souls. But if you become a drifter, and what a drifter is one that won't hold a post of duty, then you're no good to anybody. I believe that I must go preach the gospel into all the world, which I've tried for many years. But at the same time, I believe that I must pray, that I must fast. I believe that I must study. I believe I must swear to my own hurt. I believe I must provide for my family. I believe that I must provide for the household of faith. I believe that I must pay the bills on the field. I believe that I must pay the bills at Little Bethlehem. I must keep the lights out there, but I got to keep the lights back here too. Now, it's my job and my desire to do that. So I'm not a drifter. I don't believe in saying, I'll just take what little God has blessed me with and I'll take me a vacation, or I'll go to the tent. I'll forget about all of my promises and vows to God. I don't see it like that. I see where I must support the gospel with my prayers and my finance and my efforts, with all that is within me, not giving God the leftovers and the pennies, but with all of my heart, loving Him with all of my soul and strength, mind and body. Giving Him not just my little leftovers, but as they did in the early church when they sold all that they had, their land, their houses, their possessions, their bank accounts or whatever, and took it all and laid it down at the apostles' feet. That, I believe, is the only way to go to heaven. Now, if there's another way, that's good. But I don't know of another way for me. I'm speaking of me. This is what is required of me. All right, now, so then I'm doing all that I know to do from the bottom of my heart. Perhaps I'm not doing it in the measure or the strength that I'd like to do it in reaching out for souls or whatever. But I'm doing all I know to do. And I'm asking you to stand by me if that is your desire and your will. I want you. I want your help. I want your strength. And I want your loyalty. Paul said it is expected and commanded of a steward to be faithful. And I am a steward of the mysteries of God, he said. You are a steward. And you are commanded to be loyal and expected of God to be faithful. So then, things are pressed and pushed up right now. I've got to have a church payment. But God will provide it somehow or another. He'll provide it. I need it tomorrow morning. Should have done been in. Already running late with it. As many people as there are at Little Bethlehem, it would have been an easy thing for it to have been met. If you had been loyal with your commitments that you made at the men's meeting, which some of you was not loyal, it would have been met, because it was all taken care of before we left. Not in that I asked of you or expected of you, but in that you made a commitment to God out of your own desire. Paul said, let every man purpose in his own heart what he wants to give. You purposed that, and yet you didn't do it. Now that's your business. That's between you and the Lord. But I believe in my heart that if I make a commitment to God, I should make an effort to keep it. And I made a commitment. You say, what is that commitment? My entire life, my soul, my thoughts, the reflex of my body, and the intents of my heart. Everything. And daily I rededicate it and plead with God to help me to rededicate it, that I can be more sincere, more honest, more diligent, have more perseverance toward that. I do not use sickness as an excuse to escape my responsibility. I don't use sickness as an excuse to step aside from what I'm supposed to do. I still make an effort, sick or well, to try to do it. Sometimes I get to where I can't go unless the Lord picks me up. Just before service tonight, something happened. And there was no way that I could come to service tonight. and Betty can vouch for this. I went in my room and I got down on my knees and I stayed there. I don't know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. I don't know how long it was. But I stayed there. And I said, I'll stay here and God will do something. And when I got up, everything was well. I came on to church and I ministered to you. I went to church when I would be dying with the flu and pneumonia. And God would break it. So I don't believe that there is any excuse. I really don't. Whether sick or well, you keep the lights burning in your house. Is that true? Whether sick or well, you keep bread for your family. Is that true? If you can do it for them, brother, you are not truthful with God when you say you can't do it for God. Something's wrong. You are weak in the flesh, and you're not strong enough in the spirit and concerned enough in the spirit about the things of God and the household of faith. Jesus said to provide for the household of faith that they might be meat in his house. Blessed is the servant I so find doing at my coming, feeding my flock. I'll make him ruler over all I got. Brother, if you're not praying, fasting, giving, pushing, taking your duty, you are not feeding the flock of God. Don't fool yourself and say that you're feeding the flock of God. You're not feeding the flock of God. And he is not going to make you ruler over anything when he comes. You are a drifter that doesn't hold a post of duty. And a lot of you drift right out on the highways, continuing, walking, roaming, doped up, riding, looking, going here, going there, always giving excuses. I don't want to go nowhere unless I got a purpose. When I get there, I want to take care of the situation. All right, so I love you. I'm just telling you the truth tonight. Do whatever you will, but it's for me and my household. We'll serve the Lord.